This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, Shohei Ohtani ends up not taking the Mariner offer of $3.55 million. He takes a little bit less to go to the Angels, and so the Mariners now have to figure out what to do with all those international dollars. They have to spend them all this year before the middle of the summer and take care of that. But, tough one for the Mariners because, one, he goes into the division. He goes to a rival team, and he's supposed to be so good, and they gave up a whole bunch of prospects to try to be in position to try to sign him. So that move has been made. Now Giovanni Santa goes from Miami to the Yankees, and then how about this? Stanton ends up getting in this deal. Not Stanton, but the Yankees get $30 million to take this deal from Miami. Miami's just having a short sale. As you know, D. Gordon came over from the Marlins to the Mariners and is now projected to try to maybe see if he can be out there in center field because he was a second baseman, an all-star second baseman, but he's now going to be a Mariner at the age of 29. Adam Jones, cornerback for the Cincinnati Bengals, goes on injured reserve, so his season and maybe his career in Cincinnati may be over. That move was made. The Seahawks last night, at least getting the word out that Chris Carson's had a little bit of a setback with that ankle injury, so don't know if he's going to be available for the final two games of the season. They'll make a determination next Wednesday to see if he can do some things, but that's a setback for him, no question about that. Setback for the team. Overall, team's reasonably healthy. Odey Obuchi, of course, his season is over. Cam Chancellor, his season is over, but still the Seahawks going into this game with basically trying to see if Deion Jordan's going to be able to play. Allen Hurns, the wide receiver, not going to be able to play for Jacksonville. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, I guess the baseball rumors are starting to really heat up. The moves are starting to make. And Santos, Carlos goes over to the Yankees, and they also get $30 million to keep him on a $25 million a year deal.
Yeah, for 10 years. I mean, he's owed about $290 million, so that's Derek Jeter doing his old Yankee team a favor, sort of, although they'll also get Starlin Castro out of it. But it just goes to speak how the rich are getting richer in baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Giancarlo Santa is like would you call him, I think they're calling him down there, a once-in-a-generation player for that franchise?
For the Yankees?
For the Marlins and now the Yankees, yes.
Oh, he certainly was for the Marlins. He was the best player that they had, and it was curious when they signed him to that $13 million contract originally, just because they're a small market club, and they had talked about going big market, and that was a very brief experiment. And now with Derek Jeter, you got brand new direction, brand new ownership. But what it does is it makes the Yankees fearsome. I mean, you put Stanton with 59 home runs last year, with Aaron Judge with 52 home runs last year, and Gabby Sanchez with 33 home runs last year, and they got themselves a modern-day murderer's row. So Yankees are going to be very formidable next season for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And, the American League getting a little tougher. And then, of course, the tough deal, as we talked about yesterday, with not being able to get Ohtani, because Shohei Ohtani ends up taking less money to go to the Angels. Here's Jerry DePoto, put everything into this, gave up prospects to get more international dollars, and it just did not work.
Well, not only that, but also made it very public that that this was the direction that they were going in. Other teams, certainly the other teams that were in the running for Ohtani were obviously effusive in their praise of him, but none of them really made the statement that the Mariners did, where they just basically said, "This is our plan A. This is what we want to do. This is the guy that we're pointing everything at. We've been after him for a year. It's hard to perceive as anything but a kind of a slap." The Mariners did make some moves to clear up that money. They'll be able to spend that money. There'll be some good-looking international prospects that they can still lay their hands on, including an outfielder from Cuba who might be very, very good. But this was a chance to land a once-in-a-lifetime sort of talent, at least on paper, and we'll see if he projects out and if he winds up being as good as everyone thinks he's going to be. But an ace starter at the very least, which is something that they desperately needed, especially with all those injuries they had in the pitching staff last year. you know, a chance to build the franchise around a player. They haven't had a player like that for a long time. It's nothing against Robinson Cano, but Robinson Cano comes in as a veteran who was in the middle of his career as opposed to a guy who's just on the way up. So the Mariners are now going to get back to work and figure out a way to cobble together a pitching staff for next season.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, you don't know what kind of trade pieces they have, but never doesn't matter. Jerry DePoto always finds a way to make some trades. I mean, he is amazing as far as the numbers he's able to go. But if you would evaluate the setback of not getting Ohtani, I mean, where do you think it would be to put it in perspective?
Oh, boy. I mean, look, it's hard to put it in perspective. They really did indicate that this was their major plan, that they had spent a whole bunch of time. So you got to assume the organization spent a lot of time preparing this, planning for the presentation they made for him. It's disheartening. If you're in the organization, it's got to be extremely disheartening to put together a plan like this that you think is going to give you the guy to clear the space you can clear to get him and then to have him reject you. I mean, like I said, this is a potentially once in a lifetime sort of talent. You know, we'll see if he winds up being the dual threat that everyone thinks he could be. If so, then they've lost out on Babe Ruth. So that doesn't give it perspective. I don't know what does.
No, no question. And that's a tough one. But, hey, we'll see how they bounce back. But with the D. Gordon acquisition, I mean, that lineup is pretty good right now because they've now got the center fielder. They got the first baseman, Ryan Healy, that they're hoping for. So they have a very good offensive team.
Yeah, they put some pieces together, though. I mean, the D. Gordon thing is curious to me. I'm not sure how much of that had to do with just getting able to get some more of that international money, and that's why they took the deal on. You know, they obviously like him as a player. He's an all-star. He's stolen 60 bases in two seasons, 54 in another season. So he's got tremendous speed, but this is a guy, John, who's never played center field in his life, played seven games at center field 4 years ago in the Dominican Republic, and now you're going to have him change positions and take on one of the tougher positions in baseball as a pro. That's something that's been done before. You've seen guys, for example, like Robin Yount is a guy who immediately comes to mind who went from shortstop to center field and you know had a Hall of Fame career. Dale Murphy was a catcher, went from catcher to center field and had a Hall of Fame career. So it's something that does happen. But it doesn't mean just because it happened for those guys that it can happen with this guy. If he is not efficient in the outfield, then they've got themselves a $38 million utility player because they don't need a second baseman. Their second baseman does not need days off. They don't need a shortstop. Their shortstop doesn't really need days off either. They committed a lot of money to Segura last year. So this is an experiment that simply has to work. And it's a risky maneuver because, again, like I said, the guy has never played center field in his life, and they're going to make him a center fielder. We'll see if it works.
Mm-hmm. No, but you know, at least they're out there swinging. Army-Navy today. Where do you kind of put that game in perspective for sports?
Well, boy, it's a classic, isn't it, John? I mean, it's one that has stood the test of time and has remained relevant, even as those football teams, you know, really haven't remained all that relevant. Although I should say in both cases, in both the case of Army and Navy, they've both gotten better in recent years. And, you know, kind of ironically, it was putting in the wishbone offense at both places originally that got them going a little bit. And it made a lot of sense. That's an offense that requires a tremendous amount of discipline. And that's one thing you think you have with Army soldiers and Navy soldiers is a tremendous amount of discipline. This was a game that, you know, if you go way back even before our time, I would have annually been for the national championship or close to the national championship, you know, in the 40s and the 50s, and some of the great names of all time in college coaching have gone through there. But it maintains its tradition. It maintains the sense of spectacle that it has always had. And you know, they still have it in Philadelphia. They still draw a huge crowd for it. And they still got all the pomp and the circumstance that it should have. So it is in a world, in a sports world, I should say, where tradition has gone by the boards to a great extent. I mean, especially you look at college football, you look at the teams hopping around from conference to conference and you know, rivalry games no longer being played in some circumstances. And you have this kind of a touchstone to the past. The rivalry that continues on is, in many people's minds, one of the most pure of the rivalries. So It's a very special game. It's a very special event to be at.
Yeah, no doubt. Have you ever been to one?
Yeah.
What's it like?
I was at a just what I said. I mean, it's like being at a pageant as well as a game. I mean, you know, the coordination of the fan bases of the cadets and of the midshipmen is something to behold. And you just have the sense when you're at it that, and I was at it as a kid, that you're at something that is very special, is very big, and that is something that's going to be a long-lasting memory, and it certainly was for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, again, I guess it's just the game itself, because the intensity and what it means, but also what the cadets and the Navy and all those guys do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's special.
All the pomp, I mean, like I said, it really is it's a window into time. It's a window to look back into time. It's very much the same game. You know, when you look at crowd pictures from back in the 30s and 40s, the cadets and the middies are wearing the same uniforms that they wear at the game today. So it is the most traditional, you know, and you still got, obviously, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, and USC, UCLA. You've still got your traditional rivalries, but none is more traditional than Army-Navy.
Okay. Of course, not traditional is a game for Seattle in Jacksonville. They only get to maybe see that team once every 4 years. A lot of the players in this team have not played in Jacksonville. What expectations do you have for this challenge against a very good defense in Jacksonville?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because, you know, if you look in the past with the Seahawks, you know, to have a big home game like they had against Philadelphia and, you know, the primetime game and win it, and then to have to go on the road the following week to take on a really good team and cross-country has in the past been a recipe for disaster for the Seahawks. On the other hand, we all know about their record in December under Pete Carroll and how good they play at this time of the year anyway. But this game, I think it's worth mentioning, and I'm sure you have been. I mean, this game is being perceived as probably the biggest game in a dozen years in Jacksonville. But then to have a quote-unquote meaningful game in December. It's been a long, long time there since they had that. And so a crowd that is usually, I don't know if sedate is the right word, but usually not as crazed as, say, a Seahawks crowd would be, you know, will be crazed. I imagine that there's a tremendous amount of energy this week. I thought what was kind of interesting was hearing the Jacksonville players, you know, kind of play it off the way the Seahawks play it off, that it's just another championship opportunity, and not to get too high, but it's impossible for me to believe that they're not a little bit added oomph for this one. They're in the middle of the playoff race, obviously, and you know these are the bullies coming to town. I mean, this is, you know, you talk about the elite franchises in the NFL in this era, and the Seahawks are one of them, and they're playing well, and they bring in a lot of star power with Russell Wilson and company. So I imagine nerves will be something of an issue for Jacksonville. I see the, you know, the defense definitely being a problem for the Seahawks, a huge problem for the Seahawks. That defensive front of theirs is very good. But, you know, we'll actually get an indication, and we sort of got it last week, that the Seahawks offensive line in particular and pass blocking is doing a whole lot better. And you know, Luke Jokel and Dwayne Brown now playing a little bit more together, having another full week of practice, should be a little bit better. And if that's the case and they can somehow conjure up a running game, you know, I like the chances, but that having been said, I expect this to be a really low scoring game. I don't know if it'll come down to trickery for touchdowns, but it will certainly come down to big plays, and obviously whatever team makes them will win, but I'm seeing a very low scoring game, I imagine, John, and we'll see if the Jags are too tight, or if they're up to this task, but it's going to be an electric environment in Jacksonville. And again, you know, the game is being played at 1 o'clock our time, 4 o'clock Jacksonville time. The fans will have all day to get excited for it. So it's going to be interesting to see the Seahawks in this environment and against a defense that is as formidable as their own.
No question. I know last week you didn't have a good feel for how this team would do. Do you have a better feel this week from what you saw in the Philadelphia game?
Well, geez, man. I mean, my feelings are absolutely not worth trusting at all when it comes to the Seahawks. I just see it. I look at this game, and I look at Blake Bortles and see a very simple game plan for the Seahawks in general. And they don't normally, you know, mess with things too much. They They stick with their base defense most of the time and don't really react to who they're playing. But I would expect for the Seahawks in this game, like everyone does against Jacksonville, to have seven or eight men up in the box to absolutely take away their running game, no matter how many men it takes, and to have their corners on an island and dare Blake Bortles to beat them. And this will be a real challenge for those backup cornerbacks that they've had that played very well last week against Philadelphia. And remember, Philadelphia, I thought for in a lot of ways had a very bad week. I thought Doug Peterson had a particularly bad week in play calling. You know, they were running the ball very effectively in the first half, and they just went away from that in the second half, and they didn't challenge the Seahawks down the field the first half, and then they, you know, kind of threw in some late ones in the second half. Just had a very uneven day calling plays, it seemed to me. Well, you know, this is going to be different here. I mean, you're not going to allow Jacksonville to run the ball on you, and it will be up to Byron Maxwell, Shaq Griffin, and those guys to be up to man-to-man coverage. And if they are, it's going to be very difficult for Jacksonville to score in this game. And conversely, for the Seahawks, with a team that hasn't really conjured up much of a running game, it's going to be a lot on Russell Wilson, obviously. And, you know, Saxonville is what they're calling it, 47 sacks on the season. I think those stats are meaningless when they come to Russell Wilson. I mean, that's meat for him. If you come teeing off after him, he's going to get out of the way and make stuff happen. So they got to stay in their lane to a degree and control it a little bit. But I see it as a much more low scoring game than the game against Philadelphia was.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But again, a crucial one, because then of course next week the stakes get bigger with the Rams coming to town. How do you see the Rams Philly game going?
You know, I like the Rams. You know, the Philadelphia, I think they'll obviously bounce back from this game. I thought it was a smart move to stay out on the West Coast. But I think right now the Rams are playing the best football in the NFL. So I think that they're going to win this game. Now, having said that, watch Philadelphia air them out. But, you know, the Rams are beginning to – well, not beginning to. They've kind of energized their fan base. They're getting – it still doesn't look like full houses there, but it's not going to be a full house at the Coliseum ever anyway. It holds 90,000, but they're getting 60,000-70,000 fans there that are making some noise. They got a real, real good formula with Jared Goff, who's coming to his own this year, and Todd Gurley, and I just think the Rams are playing with a lot of confidence right now, so I like them this game.
Very good. So now what's the plan for today?
Well, I'm down in the Bay Area, John. Seattle U has got a very, very stiff challenge today at 5 o'clock. Game will be heard on 770 KTTH. They're playing St. Mary's of the West Coast Conference. Gonzaga's running mate. St. Mary's is 7-2. Only losses coming to Georgia and actually Washington State. They're very formidable, so it's a big test for Jim Hayford's crew, who has won 4 in a row.
Okay, well, enjoy yourself, and we'll chat on Monday.
Thanks, John.
That's Dave Grosby, Bob Graza, Tom, every weekday here, 12 to 3. All right, let's load up the phone lines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How about you?
Well, I don't know what to make of this fog.
I know. It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah. It was really weird last night. But I don't know if it's going to fog the Jets in this weekend or not, unfortunately. They may be marching to another victory here to tomorrow.
Very strange, isn't it?
Yeah, boy. Talk about a season that just I didn't see coming. I will say one thing, though. They are a fun team to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if they're going to implode or not, but they certainly are competitive, and they sure do try hard. And you know, they're making some developments here that you got to like. They're developing some young players, and you know, the other thing is, you just, again, I can't rave enough about some of these off-season moves that McKagan made that were under the radar. For example, you know, the place kicker,
right?
Canizaro, he's doing well. You know, Safarian Jenkins, Coney Ealy, DeMario Davis, Claiborne. I mean, all these, like, you know, under the radar, you know, cheap moves have really been paying off well for this team. I mean, he hasn't whiffed on too many of these.
No. And, you know, it's – and how about the – did you see the story where now the offensive coordinator saying, hey, we got to bring Josh McCown back?
Well, yeah, you got to be a little careful about that. You don't want to go down the same road you did with Fitzpatrick.
Right.
Although I don't think that McCown's necessarily the same type of individual as Fitzpatrick is regarding negotiations. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea because, you know, unless you're going to spend big in the free agent market, you know, and bring somebody in that you intend to start from day one, you know, like a Cousins, for example, you're going to break the bank because they got a lot of money to spend.
Right, right.
But unless you're going to do that, if you're going to bring a kid in, you've got to have a veteran because the kid's probably not going to start, you know, at least I would kind of hope not, you know, in week one. So you're going to have somebody not only that can do the mentoring thing, but can also, you know, take the reins at least for the first half of the year while, you know, the kid gets his feet wet. So, you know, what the heck? You got a guy that knows the system, good mentor, good teammate, ideal candidate. That's kind of what he was supposed to have been this year. But, you know, you may need somebody like that again next year. So depending on how much you have to pay him. But, you know, if he comes in at 10-12 again, I think it's not a bad move.
No. I think that, and again, just to have somebody there that can help out a little bit.
Exactly. But the question is, I mean, who are you going to, you know, they keep winning these damn games. And, you know, you're no longer sucking for Sam.
Right.
You're sucking for air at this point because you're going to be drafted in the middle of the draft pack. Because they win tomorrow, you know, they win, you know, that New England game at the end of the season. Well, it isn't going to mean much for the Patriots, but it surely is going to mean an awful lot for the Jets. They could legitimately end up with a chance to win 7 games this year. I mean, first off, who would have thought that at the beginning
nobody.
Of the year? You know, nobody. I mean, I thought they won 4 games would have been an exceptional year for them. But, you know, winning 7 games is also going to put you probably smack in the middle of the draft pack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then the question becomes, you know, how much draft capital do you want to try to spend to move up? A bunch of teams are going to be trying to do that. And you got teams like the Bills, for example, that can give a king's ransom because of, you know, the 5 picks in the first 3 rounds. So, I mean, I could see San Francisco just making a huge haul by trading back.
And I think now that they've got their quarterback for a second-round pick in Jimmy Garoppolo, yeah, I definitely can see them doing that.
Yeah. Well, why didn't they sign him to a long-term contract when they made the trade?
Because I think they wanted to – well, they didn't have to because, you know, they have the flexibility. They can franchise him. They want to see what they can get. And, you know, it gives them – you know, let's say, for example, they still want to get Kirk Cousins. Then maybe they can trade Jimmy Garoppolo. They just have the better options. The key was getting him for a second-round pick because that's not a bad price particularly. He's doing well so far. He has shown that he can pick up that offense that Kyle Shanahan has pretty good. But, you know, I think they want to move cautiously because they've got $100 million of cap room next year.
No, I understand that, but the problem is you haven't locked him up long term. Isn't he a free agent at the end of the year?
He is.
Okay, well, then how are they going to be able to trade him?
Well, they could franchise
unless you
him.
Sign him.
They can certainly
do a sign and trade. See, that's what I understand. Is you know, you talk about, you know, trading for Cousins or doing whatever you're going to do. You know, it seems to me that what I didn't understand was why they didn't lock him up long. If they weren't sold on him, you know, then why are you trading for him?
Yeah, but I mean, it's like you want to drive, have a test drive with the car before you buy the car, and so they've now, you know, they've acquired the car. It's just that they want to see, and you know, what do you pay him? I mean, if he's really going to be good, then they'll have no problem paying him because they don't pay anybody on that team right now.
Well, that's true, but the one big thing this week that I just want to kind of throw out there is, I'm real interested to see how Brandon Shell's going to do against Von Miller. I really think we've got potentially maybe a future left tackle. Developing here, and I'm kind of excited about it. I mean, he was pretty rough when they brought him in last year. I still remember him getting clobbered in that preseason game against the Redskins. I mean, he was playing over his skis and losing his balance left and right. This kid's really developed. He's not really a strong run blocker. He needs to get some more time in the weight room. But I'll tell you, I mean, he looked great against Khalil Mack. He was a big difference between the first Dolphin game and the second Dolphin game because he didn't play the second Dolphin game. In the first Dolphin game, he shut down Cameron Wake. So I'm interested to see how he's going to match up with Von Miller this week. But I think they may have a left tackle in the making here.
Which will be a surprise. They need a break on some things. Now, where's your position on what to do with the coach? Keep him or not keep him?
Oh, they're coming back.
I would hope.
You've got to come back at this point. I mean, come on. Like I said, I'm still not sold on Bowles for a whole bunch of reasons. I don't think he's a very good game manager. You know, he makes some really questionable decisions. But as far as, you know, keeping this team together, you know, playing for each other, cleaning out the problems in the clubhouse, I think you got to bring them back. And, you know, while at least 3 of these wins, the other team gave them to the Jets. You know, the Chiefs imploded again, much like we saw happen with the Browns, for example, in that game, and Jacksonville in that game. You know, the end of the Chiefs game last week was just like the Chiefs imploding at the end of that Raiders game. I mean, it's almost exactly the same script. But still, hey, six wins is six wins. And with this roster and this preseason expectations, come on, you got to bring these guys back.
Yeah, yeah, I would hope.
And I mean,
it would be a mistake to do that.
Back.
I mean, they already made one change in New York, but that was pretty evident. They had to do something there. I don't think you have to do this. I think one of the things I like is that you can see that Todd Bowles can develop good young players.
Yeah, they're playing. They're playing hard. They're playing for him. And the most important thing, John, is they're improving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Brandon Schell was one example, but there's several others. I mean, Jenkins, boy, talk about him last year and then the first part of this year and how he's been developing. I mean, he's becoming a force on the left side there. You know, and I like to, my guess is Kevin Green has a substantial hand in that, you know. But you're seeing these younger players develop. And that's what you really need to see. That's what you got to be looking for as to whether or not you want to bring Bowles back. What's that clubhouse like, and how are these young guys playing and developing? And I think you got to like what you see. I mean, there's still a lot of holes. They've really got to do a job revamping, especially the inside three on that offensive line. But, you know, time will come. They couldn't do everything in the offseason. But I like what you're seeing. I think they got to come back.
Yeah, I do too. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, take care, John. Have a good week.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Carlton in Everett. Hey, Carlton.
Hey, Professor. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing pretty well. So I got a quick question about. So I've been hearing about you, G. Scott, and all the other guys in ESPN, all talking about like the who's ranking on the MVP status is both like Brady, Wentz, and Wilson. What is your In your opinion, what do you think is who thinks going to win MVP this year so far?
I mean, I'd say at the moment I would lean toward thinking it's probably going to end up being. You know, Carson Wentz, because I think he's going to end up having the best record. But I think that, you know, you got Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson's sitting there number two, but really knocking on the door of Carson Wentz. And the reason I say that is he's doing things that no other quarterback has ever done. I mean, you know, he's got the 15 fourth quarter touchdown passes. That ties Eli Manning's record set in 2011, and Russell has four games left. Then you look at the fact that his fourth quarter numbers are incredible. You know, he's over like 80% of the offensive numbers. All those things, I think, play into a very positive thing for him.
Yeah, that's true. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is he still the leading rushing guy besides
quarterback?
Is he still having the most rushing yards than Eddie Lacy or?
Oh yeah, no question. Yeah, it's not even close.
Oh well, that's another thing that he should be have a little well should be on the resume as well.
Right.
But also with Bobby Wagner being Defensive Player of the Year, like I also heard like you guys were talking about like if. Someone was going to win, like, either MVP or Defensive Player of the Year. It's going to be either Russell Wilson or Bobby Wagner. It couldn't be both. If that was the case, how come it can't be both if it comes to that?
I mean, it can be. I mean, it depends. But I think that's where the challenge is going to be so tough. Because overall, I mean, you know, usually what happens is that defensive player of the year usually goes to a sack guy, and you've got a whole bunch of sack guys right now at either 12.5 or 13.5 sacks, so they're probably going to end up with 17 or 18, and they usually beat a linebacker out, and that's why I think it's going to be tough. You know, record plays into all this too, as far as who has the better record, as far as the MVP.
Well, I mean, yeah, records does say a lot, but at the same time, though, like. An individual player who's being nominated for MVP should be reconsidered of all the stuff that he or she, well, that he's been doing, like Russell Wilson, like you
right.
mentioned. And I haven't been seeing a lot of, I haven't been watching a lot of what Carson Wentz has been doing, but Tom Brady is Tom Brady, of course. I mean, there's no question about him. But What has been Carson Wentz been doing besides Russell Wilson? Has he been carrying
winning games? He's got the touchdown passes. He makes the big plays. Remember, he came into the game with a 10-1 record. He's 10-2, and he's been just fantastic. And leading the team and putting the team in the right position, making the big plays. I mean, he's just about done everything that you could ask of a player.
Okay, so with the Rams and Eagles game, who do you think is going to come out on top?
I honestly think it's going to be the Eagles, because I think that they go in there, they're just a better team in my opinion. I just think they have more talent. I think we saw that coming up on the game on Sunday night. So I kind of lean toward them getting it. So we'll see. But I know it's at home. That plays may play into it to a certain degree. But no, I think that they have the edge.
That's true. I mean, but you got to admit though, the way that the Eagles got beaten by the Seahawks last week, I'm pretty sure they're going to come out swinging.
Oh, no question. That's why. And the crowd is maybe favoring the Eagles a little bit more than the Rams, just because that's going to be a very loud crowd that they're going to have out there, because the Eagles fans travel well. I mean, they had a good contingent over at the Seahawks game. I think they'll end up having a good contingent at this game.
Now you say that, that's gonna swing the favor into the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that happening. So it's also gonna be like the battle of the quarterbacks. Remember how in the draft this past year or two, when Carson Wentz and Jared Goff were fighting to see who was gonna go where? It'd be kind of nice to see those two quarterbacks going face to face with each other,
right,
to see who's the best quarterback between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the great part is. I mean, these quarterbacks are facing each other. These teams are facing each other, and it makes for a great finish to this season. And, we'll see how Seattle does against Jacksonville tomorrow. Hey, Carlton, thank you for the phone call.
All right, you have a good day, John.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tony in Tacoma. Hey, Tony.
Happy Saturday, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing good. I missed some of your segments this week, and I wanted to hear your take on the foul from Gronk this week and see what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it deserved a suspension. I'm probably maybe the most cautious of everybody. I just think that until I see a real clear line on how they're handling these suspensions, I mean, I think that you should go under as opposed to over, because you're taking great players out of the game. I mean, he deserved to get suspended because, again, it was such a cheap shot. The guy was laying on the ground and he fell on him, and he did it on purpose. But, some people think it should be 2, 3, 4 games. I still think no. I think, if you're going to do 3-game suspensions, right, it's got to be for somebody that's had past problems like that, like a Vontaze Burfict, like a, because, where you start to draw the line, it's like if you start suspending everybody, it's all over the place, it gets to be too much. And that's why I thought one game was fine. I thought last week, the Michael Crabtree one with Aqib Talib, that should have been 2 games, because it was a continuation fight that just didn't stop. And so I thought 2 games would have been justified on that one. But in the end, they decided to take it from 2 and back to 1. That's why when you have penalties that keep changing, it seems like they're reinventing themselves each week, then I get a little confused on it and I have some problems with it.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of room for confusion when it comes to the rules. The fact that he didn't even get ejected from the game.
And that was a mistake. He should have been ejected from the game.
Yeah, and that was a failure on the crew.
That's correct.
And that goes to the crew. I mean, I get that. The officiating crew, they should be, that should come up.
Mm-hmm.
It should be discussed.
I mean, that one should have been a no-brainer.
Right. I mean, for sure. I mean, from what I saw, it looked to me like he was, I mean, this was, again, 5-6 seconds after the whistle, the guy is down on the ground, and it looked to me like he was trying to take his head off.
I mean,
and crush his skull, whereas, with the arm and the shoulder to the back of his head. And we've lost how many guys this year for the entire season? I mean, we lost Shazier, we've lost Chancellor, we've lost, and I know this is a different thing, but guys getting injured, and their careers kind of, threatened by some
right.
injuries that weren't from this type of a I mean, this is a completely different thing. But, I mean, this guy, White, could have, I mean, if his helmet hadn't done the job, in my opinion, he would be either paralyzed or dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was a bad one, but again, it's like, I just would rather them settle some rules and try to make, give us a better line as far as, okay, here's where these fouls are, here's what the penalties should be, and I just think they're all over the place on these. But
No question.
And that, to me, is a little bit of a problem.
We should do something about it.
Yeah. But what I don't want to see is the targeting rule. I don't want to see that one come.
Right.
That, I think, would be a little bit too much.
Right. Well, thanks for your perspective as always, and if we could get the meatloaf, we're ready, right?
That's it. There you go.
It's almost time.
Okay. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Larry in Tucson. Hey, Larry.
Hi.
How are you?
Hello from sunny Tucson.
We could use some of that sun. That'd be nice.
Beautiful day here.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I have an idea for fixing Thursday night football problems.
Okay.
I may be all wet, but let me get it out.
Okay.
So you have the starting Thursday night football game as usual. No Thursday night football in September or December. I really hated to see the New Orleans-Atlanta game put on that Thursday night. It's too important.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make up for all that, you have a Thursday night game in October and November, and you also have a Wednesday night game in October and November, and the teams that play got byes the previous week.
Okay, but the big problem is, how do you come up with the byes? That's going to be the problem.
How do you what?
How do you come up with the byes? Because you got 32 byes, right? But you got team, at least 4 or 5 games international.
Huh? I mean, you do it the way you do now, 4 byes per week typically.
Well, the way they do it now is that they'll take, well, there's none in the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season. There's none in the back end of the season, the last 5 or 6 weeks. So you're really compressing the byes, between weeks 5 and 11 or 12. That's where the problem is. And see,
that's 8 or 9 weeks with 4 teams per week.
Yeah, but see, here's where the problem is. Now you're robbing games away from the Sunday networks, as Fox and CBS. And when you have byes, you're taking good teams out of there. There's less inventory for them, and then you have some weeks where you have no good games. So in other words, they're paying $1 billion each. And so if you start taking things away from them, then they're not going to be happy just to accommodate, bye weeks for Thursday night football.
Well, I don't think anything's going to be a perfect solution, but they have a real problem now.
I agree with that. It's an issue because the players are continually upset about it, which is understandable. But also the injury factor is such, although they say statistically the injuries aren't that bad, I don't buy that, because I think what happens now is that they're not including the guys that can't play on a Thursday night game. For example, if you get concussion on a Sunday, you're not playing that next Thursday.
I agree. And I'm sure that players that are hurt on Thursday gripe about it.
As they should. I mean, if you're an older player, let's say you're 28, 29, it's going to take you to Thursday just to start feeling right. And so all of a sudden, now you're putting yourself back in the game. And you saw the Saints. I mean, Saints got 6 injuries. Now they got it to young players. They got it to older players. They got it to a lot of players. And so it's a factor. But, again, I don't think they want to eliminate the Thursday games because it's too much money, and that's going to be a problem. Hey, Larry, but good thought, though. Keep thinking those thoughts.
All right.
Bye. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Marlon in Seattle. Hey, Marlon.
Hey.
Yes.
Appreciate it. I called for another point, but there's something that I've been kicking around that your previous caller reminded me of. Do you remember when they instituted the bye? Didn't they have 2 weeks, 2 bye weeks?
No, they've never had 2 bye weeks. It's always been 1 bye week.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what logistically, I'm sure it would be difficult to do, but it's done mostly by computers anyway, yes. What if they did add a second bye week for teams playing on Thursday? So you'd have your normal bye, whatever right. that would come, and then you have.
But then you would have you would turn the 17-week season into an 18-week season, and the league is reluctant right. to do that.
Okay.
Let's put it this way: it is a viable solution. But now the question is: do you want to start? And the league doesn't. I don't have a problem with it, but you know that means they would have to start the league season before Labor Day. And the reason they don't want to do that is because people coming back from vacations, they think that, and again, maybe that's an old thought. I mean, if you add a week and make it an 18-week season, yeah, then you can start really configuring those bye weeks better. But, you know, you don't want to lengthen it so now that the Super Bowl is like the middle of February. I mean, sometimes you're going to have that, but, you know, you don't want to take it that long. And the league is very reluctant to try to do something that would have a situation where you have it before Labor Day for the start of the regular season.
Sure. Well, and also, when years ago, has there always been 2 weeks between the championship games and the Super Bowl?
Not always. I mean, but that's their preference.
Okay.
Because, again, it's such a build-up because the Super Bowl is so big that, you know, maybe not necessarily for a cold place like Minnesota, but in most other places, you know, they want that extra time to get everything ready and because it's such a big event.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense. Well, they'll figure it out, I'm sure, and we'll keep watching.
Oh, yeah.
So what I actually called for is I'm a big word person, and words have meaning, and I just want to check in with you and see what you think about this. Not the hugest deal in the world, but the MVP award.
Yeah.
It's called Most Valuable Player, but in reality, it's generally awarded to the best performing player.
Okay.
And you take case in point, the last year Peyton Manning was under contract in Indianapolis. He didn't play, but what player was more valuable to his team than Peyton Manning?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think it would be more appropriate to call the award something else, like best performer?
No. No, I mean, most valuable player, I think, stands out for itself because, again, and particularly most valuable player, because in the year that Peyton Manning didn't play, he didn't play. So he may be the most valuable to his team, but if you don't play, you can't be the most valuable player.
Sure.
So I know I think that because and plus there's a history with it. I don't that one I don't see any reason to adjust.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking my call. You have a great weekend, Professor.
Okay, Marlon, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Fantastic. Got a lot to talk about today, so let's get busy.
Okay.
But always, I hope you and Mr. Clayton are doing fabulous.
Doing well.
Super duper. So the Walter Camp Award, which is the number one most respected All-American list in the world, came out with their first team, and lo and behold, Mr. Clayton,
yeah,
the Irish had two first-teamers on the offensive line. McClinchy and Nelson were given first-team All-American status on the Walter Camp Award.
Okay.
Impressive, Mr. Clayton, to say the least. Now, the Citrus Bowl is the new home of the Irish. They will be playing a very tough opponent in LSU.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Irish win, although they're not favored by the smart guys.
Yeah, and the smart guys being the ones that pick against Notre Dame?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's understandable.
They crashed in November. They were spent. I could see that when I was watching that last game against Stanford.
Right.
Which led to a two-pint ice cream night because of it. It was terrible. You know, the big news, though, Mr. Clayton, on the college scene, of course, is the new signing date for college prospects. It's December the 20th through the 22nd.
Right.
Kids can now commit to their school of their choice in December.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you see so many coaching moves getting done now.
I understand, there's a panic because the kids can sign on the 20th through the 22nd
right.
and commit, leaving just the, well, after that, it's going to go crazy. It's fantastic for the schools in the sense that the coaches now can fill out their rosters and focus on that one or two players that they need just to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal, Mr. Clayton, a real big deal.
I would agree with that.
It's going to change the landscape. Oh, and how could I forget? Have you got your NHL tickets yet, Mr. Clayton?
Not yet, no. They have not started selling them yet.
The beloved Key Arena.
That's going to be good. I think everybody's looking forward to it.
What a snooker job the city of Seattle did to that gentleman from California.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That one's sad. I agree.
You know, it's like, I don't know. The city had to stay with Key Arena. You cannot get rid of your number one, deal in the city, which is the Space Needle, and have nothing around it to make money.
Right.
You know, they had to do that.
I still like that deal better. That,
you know,
to me was my preference.
Tough, but so NHL
but and, hey, at this stage, at least there's going to be hockey. You know, there's going to be an arena, and eventually there will be an NBA team here. Hey, Irish, got to run. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.